This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Company. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation.
Can hear you,
it's
some.
AMI Audio's on-air community, and everyone's invited. And now, the big man himself, Kelly McDonald.
Settling back in, folks, for the next couple of hours. Hopefully you can do the same with us. We've got a bunch of great content on the program. Let's start by welcoming in Ramya Muth and my co-host.
Hello, Kels. How's it going?
All right. How about you?
It's going well. Are we waiting for some news you'd like me to share about how I'm doing for a specific reason?
Oh, I'm just waiting here for the afternoon bus. That's all. Whatever you might want share.
Totally. Okay, well, I just got my TV delivered, so I'm very, very excited. It's a 70-inch. As I said, it's not as much as a monstrosity as yours is. What's yours again? 80? 82. 85? 82.
Stuck in the middle with you. That's where that song
right,
goes.
Exactly.
That's the 1970s. Yeah. You know, I know you know all that. You're expert on the 1970s.
Yeah, totally. But this was a nice, extremely anticipated delivery because you and I love our TVs, our big screens, as well as our Sonos speakers. So high five. My Sonos is now has a TV to connect to.
So do people react funny about the size? Like as if it's, oh my gosh, that's overkill. You don't need that much TV.
Some people, yeah. Because a lot of my friends are still just holding on to the smaller TVs that they already own, right? But what happens when opportunity presents itself with a move or a new space is, ooh, a new TV. So then, of course, you're going to upgrade to whatever else you want.
I think we get away and people kind of catch themselves because the, oh, do you need that big of a screen? Oh, well, I guess being vision impaired, you might. But no, it... It's just, in all honesty, it's the availability now. And I know for myself, you know, if I look at it, yeah, it does help a little bit. And I've noticed, even though I really can't make out that much more than my, like when I had the one before, it was a 43. And 47 inch. And I couldn't really make out that much more than I can now. But I know that seeing the light and everything from it makes me feel at least a little more comfortable. And I guess that's part of, as my vision deteriorates, that adjusting that we do.
Yeah, most definitely there's an adjustment period. There's also just the, you know, the quality of TVs have gone up like crazy, right? It's like looking at video magnifiers now versus, 10, 15 years ago. The clarity, the contrast for anybody who cares about it, how bright things can actually get, whatever. There are a lot more options for you now with all these things. And of course, we haven't even touched on the accessibility and the improvements on that. Yeah. Screen reader and things.
We know there's a lot of them trying it. So I'm always curious when people get something and they find, hey, there's accessibility. This thing has a screen reader. I love hearing that because right now, for a lot of us, we know, oh, it's Samsung. And there's a couple of other brands out there that have some things. So always curious about that. And I always think that's an interesting conversation. But we've got plenty of conversation ahead. Let's see what's coming up on Kelly and Company today. Fern Lullum highlights three positive stories from the UK disability community.
Looking forward to those. We're also talking to Louis Greco from the CNIB. He's joining us to talk about the virtual summit the CNIB is hosting in early February about clearing our path. This is a website dedicated to accessible environments for people who are blind or low vision.
Today's guest on the roundtable is content development specialist in Edmonton, Jim Crisco. He'll join us for conversation as we roundtable it later on in Hour 2 of Kelly and Company. Canada's big city mayors are calling for the federal government's help to make up huge shortfalls in transit revenue that threaten to derail the nation's transit systems. The Big City Mayors Caucus of the Federation of Canadian Municipalities has released a statement asking the Liberals to cover projected shortfalls that are coming in 2022 or risk major service disruptions and reductions, postpone construction of new projects, and property tax hikes. A caucus chair and Halifax Mayor Mike Savage says the future of transit in Canada is at stake.
We either have to make cuts to transit service, which nobody wants to make, or else we have to look at the tax rates. So it's a bit of an untenable situation. We want the wheels and the bus to go round and round because it's in the interest of everybody, but we need to make sure that we can afford to do that.
Savage says federal funds have been used to shore up municipal transit systems throughout the pandemic, but the final installment was paid in 2021 and ridership has still not returned. Ramya, for us, those of us with disabilities, absolute terror whenever I heard since I was a child. It was like nightmare teasing, like Freddy Krueger was going to pop up when anyone talked. We're going to, in this new year, cut transit service too.
Anything. Oh. Yes, anything. Routes, like actual changes. I'm always so frightened. It's kind of like what you're saying, Kels. When I was commuting the most during post-secondary, right? Traveling, taking all kinds of buses to get from one end of the city to the other almost every day, I was terrified that they were going to change something as small as during rush hour, this bus won't run. Like right. anything at all. You're like, oh God, please don't tell me. Like even if buses were, you know, over 5 minutes late, I was like, did they change something? Am I not aware? Does this bus not longer? Is there not an A anymore? It was just horrifying.
Yeah. Or they'd make that change, amalgamate a bus route together, and you'd be like totally lost because, okay, I don't know where this bus is going.
Yes.
They just call it the 95 now. Oh, folks, a Long Island grandmother has turned the tables on a would-be scammer.
73-year-old retired 911 dispatcher Gene Ebert got a call from someone claiming to be her grandson and saying he'd been arrested for drunken driving. He needed $8,000 for bail. She played along, filling an envelope with paper towels, and when a man posing as her grandson's lawyer showed up to collect it, the police tackled him on her front lawn and took him into custody. Gene hopes other scammers get the message.
They can be scammed too, because I played the game really well right from the beginning. They believed me hook, line, and sinker.
Ebert does have a grandson, by the way, but he isn't nearly old enough to drive. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
Oh, man, that is something else. And really, what a way to manipulate. What a way to have that fun with it. And boy, can you imagine how mad the scammers were when they realized, what the heck, this woman's playing us out here.
Did she say she filled the envelope with paper towel? That's the best part.
That was to tell them, clean up your act, will you?
Yeah, right, right.
On the other side of the break, folks, in honor of Bell Let's Talk campaign that's happening this week, yesterday to be exact, Michael Fair begins an exploration of mental health tools available on your iOS device. Hang in. He's with us in just a moment. This Saturday on The Pulse at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 Pacific, right here on AMI Audio. Joedia talks to Jessica Gibson of the University of York in England about her research into the portrayal of facial differences in Disney films and, of course, animated films and the recent James Bond film, No Time to Die. That's Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 Pacific, right here on AMI Audio, also available as a podcast. Kelly McDonald with Ramya Muthan.
All right, Kels, we're talking a lot of mental health this week, and though we have our own opinions on Bell Let's Talk Day, it is great to get in the mental health conversation. So let's bring on Michael Fair for this one.
Hi, I'm Mike Fair. iPhones, iPods, and iPads are everywhere, and they're doing great things for the blind. We explore all that, plus audio entertainment, dramas, podcasts, internet radio, and games. We share it all on Kelly & Company.
Mike, you thought it'd be useful to take this opportunity during this week to begin an exploration of mental health tools available for and on your iOS device. And I'm very excited because you did something similar to this last year. So it's like a really great reminder as well as new information for anyone who is not aware of some of these options and tools. What sorts of tools will we be talking about during the exploration?
So this is kind of a multi-segment thing. So this week we'll focus on the meditation apps, the big mental wellness apps in this space. Headspace, Calm, Shine, 10% Happier are some of the more the popular ones, and they're giants in this area. So they try to give you sort of a mental toolkit, and then you subscribe to get access to this. But don't worry, other tools down the road, we're going to, the next week is going to be some cheaper apps as well that do, that focus on smaller, instead of trying to do everything, it focuses on little areas. Journal keeping is one, because that's a really helpful thing you can do. There's apps that try to help you keep on focus, keep track of your tasks, what you have to do so you don't forget things, all sorts of things like that. Soundscapes are another big way that people can sort of keep their focus. We'll look at some apps that focus on those things. And then to round things off at the end, the third week out, we'll look at basically other resources that your iPhone can give you access to, other things like podcast, books, different mental wellness resources, communities online that maybe social media can help you access, all this kind of thing that your iPhone is great to help you do. Having all this on a device that you can carry around is really, really useful. Mm-hmm. You can have this anywhere, so you can just pull it out and see what's happening in your community or participate when you have a little time, all sorts of things, meditate, things like that. Lots of apps to help you to do this stuff.
Tremendous amount of access. For people who missed your segments last year, what are the popular mental wellness apps like?
So these apps are basically they try to be the solution for all your mental problems in terms of anything low grade. I should point out that these apps are not saying you don't need professional therapists, psychologists, et cetera. If you have problems in that range, you should, obviously go to the professionals. This is for, things like I've been noticing I'm a little down lately. What can I do to maybe help get, my mind in better gear or on a better track, approach life more evenly, develop, resources and of patience and calm, things like that. Little things that in the self-help area, right? So these apps, you subscribe to get access to a bucket of resources and services and guided meditations, soundscapes, usually music, stories to help you sleep. They try to have something for just about anything, creativity, focus issues, de-stressing, all of that stuff packed into one app, and you pay like a subscription for that, and you have access to all these resources. So that's kind of what they're all about.
Okay, so let's talk about your conclusions with the first app. We'll chat about Shine.
Yeah, Shine is basically, it thinks that a lot of other, basically the other meditation apps and things like that are missing a good chunk of people, women, people of color, different groups of that nature that might just not find themselves in this strangely white sort of representation of meditation practices and kind of higher priced, kind of almost they paint themselves as the underdogs trying to, help the people who the other apps don't care about. Now that I think is a bit of a stretch, but that's kind of what they go for. And so the coaches are mainly women. I've certainly noticed that. Lots of different minorities represented, and they all bring that meditation to the table. And I really thought they might offer, some different tools, and it's more a different angle. They really focus on really helping you feel okay about taking space in the world. That's a big focus of them. Journaling, they really push you to stop and think about what you hear. Write down your thoughts at different points. What do you think about this? What do you feel about this? Journal about, write a little bit about it, right as you're finishing a meditation, things like that. So I really admire that. Getting people to stop and think is a really good idea. What I didn't admire as much is the accessibility shortcomings of this app. Right. You have to fight to use it with voiceover. It's all possible. You can do everything. So if this is the kind of meditation and mental toolkit that could help you, you might want to give it a spin. But you have to know enough about voiceover to say, switch on screen recognition to find the button that lets you then go on from a meditation session to the next step. in the app. So there's little things like that. You have to log in fairly frequently, which is something I don't notice that in any of the other apps I've checked out in this space. So there are rough spots that still need to be kind of addressed. So clearly their focus has been on the materials, which are very well produced. They have a wonderful one about making you think about the coffee you're drinking, the warmth, the heat, the smell, you know, really meditating on it. So they have a lot of really good ideas, but they just need some polish. They are okay. A bit cheaper. They're about $20 cheaper than other of these apps tend to be.
Okay. So in our position, the accessibility is something to think about, or certainly know your voiceover. What drew you more to Headspace, Mike?
Headspace was, I liked the teacher right from the outset. Andy Puddicombe is just a wonderful, he has got an awesome background. He's gone through the hoops, done the homework, become a monk, in the course of doing this, you know, has a sports degree background as well in athletic support. So he's really gone on a journey to become an expert in meditation and bring that back to the West, as it were. And so he's done his homework to be able to do this, to present it to us. And he does it really well. I like the kind of a nice approach in terms of well-produced material. There's no friction in terms of accessibility. These people have thought about voiceover users, and they've gone out of their way to keep it accessible, despite some pretty significant changes Apple threw at them with iOS 15 and 14 before that. It's been really steady, smooth sailing, and that basically won me over. I've really loved their materials. There's still tons I have to explore, and it just really suits me.
Awesome. Really great feedback from Headspace overall. But when do you tend to make use of the resources in Headspace, Mike?
Usually in the morning, I'll start, soon after getting up. Now, consistency is not my strong point. I get suckered into things sometimes. I started reading or something else. The next thing I know, it's like middle morning, and but when I really get into my groove, I will use their morning routines, do meditation. Afternoons, I typically use one of their courses. I'm doing one on creative writing right now, creativity rather. And it's a 10-session course. I'm about halfway through. There's still a lot of these. Lots of resources, despite my year of pretty heavy use of this app. They're always producing more stuff. So I don't feel I'm going to run out. And there's lots of ones I go back to, to help with their, and at night too. Sleep. They have a lot of resources to help you wind down, get to sleep. If you wake up, they have things that might help you sort of get relaxed enough to try to sleep again. So I, as someone with sleep difficulties, I make quite a bit of use of that.
Mm. A lot of people, that's a big topic these days, is sleep. And we've heard on this program from various contributors that get that sleep. It's so important. And there's so many things, apps out there that are helping you be able to do that. Have you looked at some of the other similar mental health wellness apps?
Yes. Sarah is a life subscriber now to Calm. And I briefly looked at it, but I ended up sticking with Headspace for me. But I could have been just as happy, I think, if I had followed her and gone the Calm route. It's a really right. It's about on an equal level as Headspace in terms of just polish, accessibility. Mm-hmm. They've got a good crew of core people involved, bringing you the meditation. These apps all have their kind of little band of teachers and coaches that you get to know as you hear them do the meditation materials and keep pumping them out. Celebrity things. I think Calm might have a bit of an edge in terms of bringing in celebrities sometimes to do these things, but Headspace has certainly doesn't shy away from that. So they're about on equal playing fields, and they're very good. Beginners shouldn't have any trouble. There's not any access issues either direction. So you're in for a smooth ride either way, I think, between those two.
Yeah, I think so too. I've explored both apps as well, and I really do find the accessibility to be quite seamless on both. Calm had a bit of a shift in accessibility in the last year and a half. Like they keep improving, and it's very noticeable, whereas Headspace was always quite good. How about 10% happier? This is the next one.
Yeah, it's recommended by Jonathan Mosen and from Mushroom FM. That's where I first heard about it. And apparently it was founded by a fellow who actually was a news journalist, was really worried about stuff and all stressed. And then he got into meditation and found it really was helpful despite all his skepticism and decided to write a book. And then now he's built an app. And there isn't as much of a central team, I find, with this one. You get it's kind of material from all over. And the basic thought is you were not going to, fix your world. But we can at least make you, help you get to a point where you're 10% happier. So they're not sort of aiming for perfection and, perfect lives. Some of these other apps kind of want to be the solution to almost everything. And this kind of says, no, we're not going to solve all your problems, but we will nudge you in a better direction. We'll make you aware of some techniques you can use. They have hundreds of courses that are, it's all audio. This is really audio focused, so perfect for blind people. And, it's a ton of courses from people who have really given this some thought. So, lots of stuff to work with. You're not going to run out of material, that's for sure. And, big selection.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mike, is there any point to subscribing to more than one of these apps?
I've looked around at them to see if there might be, but I really would have to say not. Find, maybe subscribe like on a month basis to a few of them, try them out for a month. That should give you long enough to really see whether they're suitable for you, which you like better. But these subscriptions cost, like a month subscription is going to cost you like $17-$20 on one of these apps. Yearly subscription, I just renewed my Headspace for like $89. So mm-hmm. that's something, and these apps demand that you have the discipline and you have the commitment to put them to use. The resources aren't going to do you a lot of good if you don't use them. And frankly, each of these apps offers enough that you're not going to run out. It's not a question of quantity. You're going to have tons just with one app. It's a question of which one works for you better. Find the style, find the team that you trust. The people behind the app are going to be a big difference. The what they offer. Do you like the celebrity stories? Do you like the soundscape work? How they do that. Mm-hmm. They all have little different takes, different focuses, different kind of things that they center. But they all draw from the same tool bucket, right? The same kind of techniques overall to help you. Because this is on the level of self-therapy. This is if you're disciplined enough to try and help yourself and you have the wherewithal to actually try to practice these techniques and stick with it. Commitment is everything. You have to commit to this and really give it time to work its magic. So, it can really help, but you have to help yourself. You have to put in the time.
For sure. Well, I mean, the exploration of it is also quite neat. So I think the aesthetics for different ones are might play a role in what you end up with. There's just a lot of different ways that these apps may or may not speak to you. Mike, thank you so much. Looking forward to more mental health talk with you next Thursday.
Absolutely. Got lots more coming at you on that. Yep.
Sounds good. The apps discussed in the segment can be found in the App Store and they're free to try, but require a subscription, as Mike was saying.
Coming up next, Fern Lullum highlights three positive stories from the UK disability community. We'll talk to her in a moment. Ramya Muth and Kelly McDonald. We are the hosts of the program. Thanks for being with us. Mike was talking about the wellness apps. Calm, is that what you say now the most talked about?
Calm as well as Headspace. Both of them are doing really, really well. Once in a while, you hear something like a celebrity feat or something that's going up, a new feature or whatever from either of them. But both Calm and Headspace, I think, are quite well-backed and even not necessarily sponsored, but, promoted in different scenarios. Like Headspace was promoted through airport, remember? Like I think it was maybe Pearson, but there was some specific promotion going on where they were saying, like, when you're chilling at the airport and you're tired and you're getting ready for your travels, you know, check into Headspace to Matthew McConaughey or whoever it was,
right,
that kind of thing. Yeah. So, yeah. But I do love, honestly, that we're talking not just about one app that's doing really well, but this overall overarching theme of being able to use our devices for mental health reasons. Mm. I think it's great.
So when Mike talked about the tools being the same in the box, just the different delivery of them, is that what for you made you make a choice as to if you were going to say, oh, I stuck with this one or I preferred? Is it the presentation of it that makes you say, hey, you know, that's what I want. That's the one for me that has all the tools, delivers enough stuff, but I like the method.
Yes. I think the method, obviously, when you get past the accessibility conversation and say, yes, both of them are very accessible. They're both doing really, really great with that. Then the next thing you think of is, okay, what makes the most sense to me? You know,
yes.
Even as far as to say, do you journal on your own already? Are you going for guided meditations? Do you just need an app to tell you, I need to know that I've been meditating for half an hour. Please help me. Or are you looking for the best background white noise, you know, library? Like what are the offerings that you don't have in your toolbox already that you're looking for in one of these apps? And they all offer it, like Mike says, in different ways, in different kind of scenarios. But maybe some of them you can do without because you already have it somewhere
right.
else, or you're already practicing it elsewhere, you know?
Yeah. And then obviously there's going to be the ones that for you aren't as effective, aren't the ones that are applicable, but they're going to be there. And then again, you might find one that you generally, I don't really like doing that. And for whatever reason, presentation on one of the others grabs you, makes you feel more comfortable,
yeah.
makes it more user-friendly for you. We're not able to get a hold of Fern, folks, today, so we'll put the brakes on that segment and get back to it. She has some great stuff for us that we'd love to hear about. Eminem's characters are getting a makeover to promote diversity.
Candy maker Mars is embracing diversity by giving its six Eminem characters a more modern appearance and more nuanced personalities. The characters, which come in six different colors, will also now come in different shapes and sizes. Two of the characters will look less stereotypically feminine. The green M&M ditching high-heeled boots in favor of sneakers. The brown Candy replacing stilettos with lower heels. Mars will also put added emphasis on the ampersand in the M&M logo to illustrate how the brand aims to bring people together. Dave Packer, ABC News.
So, a lot of things when we hear about stuff like this, some of them are really out there. Hey, you know, we're trying to change what we've been doing and give this more inclusive kind of look and feel to what we're doing. Some things are a little more subtle. And, you know, some of the changes, I kind of like it when it's subtler, just because that's the way we accept things and the world switches. We always get, oh, well, if I have to think about that or remember that, or, oh, this doesn't seem to be the same as, we know. There are so many things that we're slow to change, and that's just the way human, you know, we work as a society. So what do you think of this?
I think, yeah, this is great. Like in the ways that you're saying, subtle, we're kind of celebrating in tiny little ways, but one day we'll look back and it'll feel monumental. Right? That's the thing about
right.
everything. You can think about that as representation of color in media, in entertainment. Like, of course, there are things that are still being worked on. But in the last 50 years, people have moved things forward in tiny little ways, in huge ways, individual ways, as committees, as organizations. So all these kind of things do make a difference. Now, we're talking about it right now, like you're saying, and we're actually bringing it to the table as a conversation piece. But if nobody noticed, it's still making some kind of psychological impact when, you know, they get exposed to it, right? That's what you're saying about the subtleness, the subtleties.
Yeah, and I think sometimes that's so much more effective because our first response is to resist something. Even if it's a good thing, it's that concern about how am I adapting to this? How am I going to carry
right.
this? I don't want to offend anyone
we overthink.
If I make a mistake.
Exactly. We overthink a lot of things, and from language to identity to, you know, can I disclose, can I not disclose? We think about so much stuff over and over again. And of course, it's because we feel like it will be judged or discriminated against or whatever the case may be. But in ways like this, yeah, you're just bringing it to the table. You're just saying, hey, this is what's happening with M&Ms.
It's interesting what's discovered when we have something like this pandemic and we look at something like Zoom that had exploded. They went to changing their app accessibility, all sorts of other different things, backgrounds, things that, yeah, I'm sure they had in the hopper thinking of, or hey, should we do that, kicking around, laughing. But all of a sudden, they were front and center on the main stage, left out there with everyone standing around saying, well, you've right. got the floor, and knowing we're going to run with this. But it's interesting when stuff like that happens, Ramya, the changes that happen, so they make their changes. But what does that do to us as a society that absolutely needed to rely on them? And then we talk about changes that had to be instantaneous.
Mm-hmm. The thing about the pandemic kills is because it happened so suddenly. We didn't even have time to think about it, right? Like, we're thinking about it now, almost hindsight, as like, hey, let's keep comparing and contrasting notes. But you didn't have that in the first few months of the pandemic. You had to make moves. You had to keep things going regardless of how you've been doing it all this time. That was the only way to survive. And as we've noticed, and sadly, some things didn't survive. But for some of that, it's good things, right? It's good changes that we had to make very, very quickly to adapt to the new world.
And again, we stop and see how adaptation, it works for some, doesn't. But when we know it's the priority and we have to make that adjustment that might be very overreaching or huge that has to be done, we're all appreciative. But it's interesting how the world direction changes. And I know what people would say, well, the pandemic changed the world direction. But there are so many little things and the nuances that will reflect the same. Yeah, that are covered in
exactly. Want to talk a little bit about the next little item we have? An unprecedented situation is unfolding right now, speaking of the pandemic, in Canadian cattle country, where industry groups say a widespread thief shortage has escalated into a crisis situation.
Last summer's extreme drought in Western Canada left domestic supplies of hay and other feed grains at low levels. Many cattle producers have had to resort to importing large quantities of corn from the U.S. to feed their animals through the winter. But extreme cold, COVID-19-related labor shortages, and other supply chain issues have disrupted rail transport and delayed feed shipments. Several large feedlot operators expect to run out of animal feed within days. Emily Javeski, The Canadian Press.
Whatever word I said, it meant to say feed shortage. Yes, this is kind of drastic, Kels. Of course, this is going to affect the supply chain and everything else down the line. But just in and of itself, the fact that they're not getting fed is very, very scary. I don't know if, like it did say, unprecedented. I don't know when the last time was that they'd had to deal with something like this.
Well, we heard about a lot of this as people weren't able to work, weren't able to do stuff when lockdowns were happening, because you heard about the glut. There was some, but then where you know it's going to catch up with harvesting, with, hey, where's the feed going to come from, the processing to get. So we know, and we've heard, I've first heard this stuff back in, like a year ago, more than that, as the things happen and we were warned, these are going to be problems. We are seeing the problems everywhere, and we do need to understand, okay, this is why the shelves are bare, as we've heard, so many times now on the news, when you go shopping or when you go to order something, what do you mean you don't have that? You always have that. And I think that for us is where you get panicky. Oh my gosh, I better buy 100 of these then, because next week it might not be there. Yeah, sure, it's there. It's getting things shipped, but it's that price. It's going to be up. It's things like starting there when feed isn't available for animals and you're like, uh-oh. The panic of, where do I get it? Well, and people throwing their hands in the air, suppliers saying,
nowhere.
I don't know. That to me is just shocking. A man in the U.S. whose arm was severed in an apparent workplace accident stumbled upon the right people at the right time.
It happened in Lewiston, Maine. Officials say a man was walking along a street Friday carrying his own severed arm. Witnesses say it was cut off near the shoulder. Marianne Brenchick, director of Lewiston Public Works, says it had to be divine intervention that two workers sanding sidewalks nearby happened to be trained in the use of tourniquets. They stopped the bleeding until an ambulance arrived. Lewiston Police Lieutenant Derek St. Lawrence said that probably saved his life. The man is expected to survive. Investigators followed a trail of blood back to a business where several people said the man had been operating a band saw. OSHA is investigating. I'm Jennifer King.
The shock must have made him wander, right? Like come away and like totally, like, why would you leave, right? But if you get such a horrible shock to the system, you know,
yes,
with your arm,
and adrenaline, and mm-hmm.
Yeah, I find it, yeah, like, I mean, because people will ask the question, well, why would the guy go? Why wouldn't they, the people around him, be able to? But isn't it kind of interesting when you think about that shock, the people around him, no one grabbing him saying, hey, you can't. And the people he ran into who had the resolve, the knowledge, and were able to do something. Otherwise, yeah, even if he had stayed at work, we might be talking about real serious other issues.
Yeah, honestly, that is definitely more than just a coincidence. That sounds like really, really lucky times. But like going back to what you were saying about the what made him move, right? What made him try to leave and that kind of thing. I always wonder about that. I always wonder about what makes
that
people
sense.
Act the way they do, exactly,
yeah, well,
in traumas, case, during traumas.
That's it. That being trauma, mm-hmm, it's a stranger, whether it's the shock or doing, versus when you get that, you know, I for whatever reason, moved over to the left just as the car,
yes,
mounted the sidewalk and missed,
yes,
me. Like, those are kind of, wow, what
those
sense
are like,
is there?
That happened. Yeah.
But when you have somebody injured like this and it just that direction, like, I know you can sit there, pull this apart and say, well, how he went the right direction. He went, you know, and you can say fate intervened. Obviously, you know, you feel that God was looking out for the person. Like, there's so, mm-hmm, many different things that you can, but a lot has to happen. So when you have this kind of, hey, sir, what are you doing carrying that arm? You know, really, what a situation. And hey, we better help you. It's just, yeah, so freaky. So I kind of wanted to share that. I found that very interesting. Make you stop and think if you start pulling it apart, or as you said a little while ago, oh, we overthink so much stuff, don't we? Folks, we weren't able to get Fern in here this afternoon. We'll try, because she had some great stories to share with us, some positive stuff. And I think stuck here in January, right at that time as we were talking earlier in the week, about the Monday blues, about so many things that make people kind of down at this time of year. It would have been nice to get some of these stories in. So we certainly don't want to miss them. Maybe she can bring them in next time she's on the program in a couple of weeks for disability highlights from the UK. I'm going to pause here. Rum and I will return. Louis Greco from the CNIB will join us to talk about the virtual summit that the CNIB is hosting in early February. It's called Clearing Our Path. We'll be right back. Wherever you're listening into the program around the world, thanks for being with us. Whether you're using TuneIn Radio, OO Tunes, or the Radio Player Canada app, maybe you're over there at AMI.ca to listen to the show live or the repeat of the program at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. You might also be checking out the Kelly and Company podcast. Simply subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You could listen to the show in segment form or the complete Kelly and Company podcast, where we include the audio of Vanity Card and so much more. That is the Kelly and Company podcast, available from your favorite podcatcher. I'm the host of the program, Kelly McDonald, with my co-host, Ramya Muthan.
Here with the CNIB update now, Kels. On February 7th and 8th, the CNIB is hosting a two-day event where stakeholders can share their ideas and suggestions to strengthen the guidelines for the next edition of Clearing Our Path. We want to learn exactly what Clearing Our Path is, and Louis Greco from the CNIB is joining us now. Louis, thanks for coming on Kelly and Company. How's it going?
It's going good. It's going good. Thank you for the opportunity.
Great. Well, this is not too far ahead. It's coming up the 7th and 8th of February. So tell us about Clearing Our Path and how it evolved over time.
Okay. Clearing Our Path is now a website. It's the address is clearingourpath.ca. It's available in both French and English. It was originally published about 25 years ago as a hard copy book, right around the time that the internet really started to take off. Mm-hmm. And it basically consists of guidelines on how to make public spaces accessible to people with sight loss. The guidelines are all based on existing standards and global best practices. And by that, what I mean is that we build on the standards and look at the standards and ask the question, would this really help someone who's blind or partially sighted?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer is no, we then turn the original author and subsequent authors, there's been several people who have made some changes to it over the ensuing years, we then turn to either independent living specialists or O&M instructors and people with sight loss who have to navigate that built environment element, whatever it is, and try to come up with, well, the standard doesn't go far enough. What would be an appropriate way for a city or a building planner to do that? And that's how we come up with the guidelines.
Right. Okay. So when we stop and we think 25 years, as you said, there's been adjustments, there's different things that people have brought to the table. And when the question's asked, hey, let's see if there's a better way to do this. So why are we hosting a summit to update Clearing Our Path? I know the answer, but I'll let you tell us.
Well, there's a couple reasons. First of all, many of the accessibility accommodations that are beneficial to one group often create, I don't want to use the word barriers, but create challenges.
Conflict and challenge.
Conflict. I like that mm-hmm. word. Well, no, conflict is, let's say challenges.
Yeah, I think your challenge is probably a little bit softer.
Yeah. So they create challenges for people with other disabilities. So the whole idea behind the summit is to try and identify where those challenges exist. And then through open dialogue with a variety of stakeholders, try to find out, okay, you can't push and you can't pull. Where's the middle ground that would work for as many people as possible?
Right, right.
That's the whole idea behind the summit. That's why we're doing it.
Got it.
I just want to jump in with the thought, and I think one of the things we've always talked about is the strength of a disability community. And what I love about this is, as you say, the updating, because of those challenges that it may create and causing kind of, oh, well, this works for one disability or most of the persons that affected with that disability, but not for everyone. And I think we're seeing that wonderful shift of that. Okay, so for you, what can we do here, and how do we meet in the middle here, or what is the best way for the most people? And I love that.
Well, you can't be all things to all people.
No.
And trying to make it, the built environment perfectly accessible to everybody is impossible. Municipalities are resource stretched. That's what we hear all the time. There's all kinds of challenges that are, some are real around existing infrastructure. When you're talking about APSs and curb cuts, how do you do that in a city like where I live now in Halifax that's got infrastructure that goes back 200 years? So there's challenges. But I think if the designers and the funders and the planners and all the experts that actually are responsible for building stuff, if they understand how people use it and really understand how people use it, then I think, I hope, I pray that they'll do a better job of creating new infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's the bigger hope, right? So tell us about the actual summit that's coming up on the 7th and 8th. What
2 days, expect? 2 days, starting at noon Atlantic time. And I want to emphasize that it's Atlantic time. So we've got keynote addresses. We've got 3 keynotes. We've got 17 breakout sessions. We've basically taken the contents of Clearing Our Path and broken it out into 17 different discussion groups. They're going to run for 90 minutes. We've got facilitators for most of them. And the idea is to have an open discussion with interested stakeholders from people with lived experience and from the other folks involved in building the environment.
Lou, can we talk about those stakeholders? Who do you hope are going to be there, and who might we know of that's participating that you can speak to?
Well, as of this morning at about 9:30, we had 403 people registered. Mm-hmm. They are persons with disabilities. There are people with sight loss. Some names I recognized. Some names I recognized, people from government, both municipal and provincial governments, folks from engineering firms, architects, traffic planners. It's a very, very broad audience.
Nice.
Okay. Anything particular that you're trying to, you know, shine light on throughout the pandemic, throughout the actual summit, the kinds of things that you're hoping to hear from these stakeholders?
You know, in an ideal world, these guidelines wouldn't exist. And I say that because if the way standards work, if the standards were appropriate, if they were adequate, and most importantly, if municipalities and people responsible to build infrastructure actually followed the standards every time, then there would be no need for Clearing Our Path. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, because of some of the challenges, because of some of the way that our constitution is set up and the way that governments work in this country, there is no unified code. You know, you look at the National Building Code, and the provinces base theirs on that, and then they tweak it, and then municipalities tweak the provinces. So what I'm hoping to walk away with is to identify those possible gaps where CNIB's guidelines can be strengthened. So if someone sees how we're suggesting corridors and hallways within a building be laid out, if someone has specific example about exactly what type of color contrast works best, or what type of innovative lighting is they've got experience with, that will make the guidelines stronger and better. And then when we take that report, that we take those findings and put them into a consolidated report and give them to the Government of Canada, specifically Accessibility Standards Canada, as they develop a national standard on accessible public spaces, hopefully they'll be able to find some wisdom from community that can help underpin their national or the forthcoming national standard.
Lou, before we get into how we can register, is it the timing right now, the right time to do it? We think of the pandemic. We think of so many things available. We know that a lot of the provinces are coming out with accessibility legislations in one way or another. Is this the right time to get those ears listening? Are they listening, or are we as just into the same battle toughness that we would have had 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
Let me ask you this question, Kelly, and I'm going to sort of throw you off track here. When's the best time to plant a tree?
Yes, exactly. Ah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I thought there may be some of that. Is there a moment? But we know right now, This is just out of necessity, time to be done.
Yeah. There's never a good time, right? There's always reasons why. I've been at this for many, many years, and you hear the same reasons why we can't do that.
Uh-huh.
And they're good reasons why they can't do it. They're not acceptable, but they are good reasons. So, you know, our job as people who live and work in the advocacy arena is just to persevere, continually educate, continually share information, and to hold people's feet to the fire when it's appropriate.
Yeah. Well, there are times when it feels like the world is listening a little harder, or trying to tap into the resources around them. And so in that sense, it feels like really good timing. Louis, where do we go to sign up to find out more information about this?
Okay. The best way to do this is to go to clearingourpath.ca. It's clearingourpath.ca. That's the main where the guidelines live. And for the next few days, there's a banner at the top of the page that says you are invited. And that'll take you to a link where the actual event program is. And then you click on the button that says register and fill out the form, and then you'll get added to the list.
Lovely. Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, giving us the details, and really having this incredibly philosophical conversation about the kind of barriers, what did we decide with? Challenges that people with disabilities face.
So, well, thanks. Yeah, right. Thanks for the opportunity, you guys, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Lou.
Thank you.
Okay.
We were talking about the Clearing Our Path Summit that's about to take place, CNIB virtually, from February 7th and 8th. Louis Greco was the one who told us all about it, joining us from Halifax today.
Coming up in the next hour of Kelly and Company, we're going to flip through some quirky stories from around the globe when Paul Aflalo joins us. He's co-producing on the program, and that will be on our What in the World segment. Today's roundtable guest is Jim Crisco, but on the other side of the break, Bill Shackleton joins us for the Thursday edition of The Buzz with Bill. If you want to reach out to the program, maybe you got a message for our communications department, ask the folks over in marketing something about Accessible Media Inc., you can do it at feedback@ami.ca. feedback@ami.ca, best way to do that, just toss them an email. You can follow along on Twitter @AMIAudio in case you're wondering what's going on next segment on Kelly and Company. Oh, they got that info for you out there on Twitter, and maybe you have some questions, @AMIAudio. Give us a call, 1-866-509-4545. Best way to do that by giving a ring, 1-866-509-4545, telling everybody that it's for Kelly and Company when you leave the message. Give your message, and oh, while you're at it, if you don't mind, give us permission to use your message on air. Ramiel Muthan, Kelly McDonald, we are the hosts as we walk through our Thursday edition of the program. I'd like to invite Bill Shackleton in here now. Bill brings us a few items to talk about. We never know exactly where he's going to go with the conversation. We just let him set up and gets us into some conversation as we work our way through this Buzz segment. Billy, how's today?
Today is going handsomely. I mean, as good as to be expected. Yeah.
Oh, I haven't heard that term in a long time. Okay. Oh, it's handsomely good.
I think it's the first time I've used it. I mean,
for sure.
It just came out of my mouth. You know what I mean?
For sure. That is your British background.
I guess it is.
Yeah, that's the heritage working there. Where are we starting, sir?
Well, let's do this one. Quebec touts ambitious plan to reduce waste. Retailers ask for delay. So this is a very interesting story, although not a new one, not a new concept. That comes at the end. Coming from us, from Global News, actually. So basically what's happening in Quebec is an environmental watchdog has given the Quebec government a failing grade when it comes to waste and reducing waste. And apparently they feel that the government hasn't done enough to reduce what is going into the landfill. So what they want to do is they want bottles, they want you, the consumer, to take your bottles back to the stores where you bought them. So basically, if you're going to be paying a deposit to, you know, on a drink, say, or a bottle of pop or whatever, and then when you take the bottle back, you get your money back. It's just like the beer stores here in Ontario or wherever.
Right.
It's causing a problem. Stores are saying, well, first of all, where are we going to store all these bottles? Because a lot of the stores, Quebec, well, the one the article mentioned isn't big enough to store hundreds, what could be hundreds and hundreds of bottles. And what about the smell? They're worried about the smell.
And cockroaches and whatever.
And, Oh, yeah.
Because, Bill, this is something, when you stop and think about it, because the first thing you thought when you read it, Bill, I know Shaq's mind is, how the heck did you guys do it years ago when we used to come back and get our 5 cents back? That was in Shaq-a-Doodle's head as he read this, mumbling to himself, I don't understand why you guys did this years ago. So, Shaq, that was it. Years ago, where a lot of these people, they don't have that memory, I guess. So, and we shrink down space costs so much. I hear them and I stop and think, oh my goodness, it's true. You would just bring the bottle back. You didn't even necessarily rinse it out. You'd, here you go, where's my nickel, you know, or whatever. What a potential problem.
Well, I think, you know, we used to do it in the olden days where we bring our pop bottles back and all this sort of thing. But I think stores just said, the heck with it. It's too much of a hassle to give people money, you know, bring them back. What do you do? You've got the other hand, you've got the drink companies who are going to be required to recycle these bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to take them back.
Yeah. Well, they're saying is we have to buy special equipment, which mm-hmm. they don't have, to right. recycle.
So yeah, they're asking for more time, right, Billy?
Yeah. Yeah, they're asking more time.
This is like the throwback moment when who was it? CRTC or whoever announced that primetime television was to be offered with described video. And then the big companies came back and they were like, we need more time. We don't have the resources. And it was just like a big
complaint
session. Exactly. Let us give us more time. listen, guys, somebody's got to take the onus on this. And this is a huge chain effect. I understand that, right? Like we got to clean up and we got to bring the stuff back, and then the stores got to deal with it, and then from the stores it's got to go back, and then we have to get our refunds from the government for the extra charges. Yeah. Of course everyone has to play a part, but all the time what are we saying? We're saying, how do we as individuals take part in climate change and climate awareness and make things better for the planet? Well, this is how. This
but
is exactly how.
But we stumble over recycling even, because put it in the right bin. I don't know what goes in
what
which bin. Man, I get frustrated. I'll just crush it up and throw it in the garbage. It's so hard.
So we start here, right? This is actually just a start, to be honest with you, right? So we start here, although it's a huge change and everybody's mad about it for one reason or another. We start here and then we all take part in the new systems that we need to build in order to save our planet. Like, it's just that clear, crisp to me. If you're a drink company and you're saying, but, that's great. Deal with it. Because this is the way that we can all take some responsibility on the bigger levels as well as individually.
Yep. And when it worked for them, Billy,
when
it really worked for them, they had no trouble recycling and making sure that they got back and still, you know, charging the massive amount for the bottles and whatever. If we're going to do that, there has to be like that knowledge we know is out there. We are going to run out of space, or we're putting this trash that's going to take forever and it's going to damage the world in general. So, do they have a solution, Billy?
No, they want to put. No, yeah, it's going to be, they want to do it in the next 10 months. So we're going to see, and the reaction from consumers, though, well, they love it. They want to.
Exactly.
I mean, if
you're already doing stuff like this.
That's
right. We're already separating compost and garbage and recycling. We're already taking some stuff back. Like, this is not that much of a change.
Reusable bags and stuff. So if you're carting all that back, throw my empties in there. Mostly for us, we just want to know where we can go. And I think even with recycling, the clarity and stuff like that, that we can handle in our minds, containers, and I put this and this, this and this, and that money, that time, I know somebody's got to sort it out. I get that. Yeah. But that's enough in itself to make us get so frustrated.
Oh, I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. And as I say, it isn't new. It isn't new.
It's not. It's a new system.
Well, it is.
Yep.
It's a new system.
So there's
a
lot of resistance.
There is, and it's done in Vancouver because apparently they already have equipment to recycle their own plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they're ahead of the game. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we talked a lot about that plastics thing so much before the pandemic, and then because of the pandemic, a lot went out the window. So we've got to get back on track. It's an absolute priority in our society. Sir, where do you want to go next?
Well, we are going, since we're on the climate change, trail, let's do this one. Ski resorts aim for more efficient snowmaking amid drought. So this concerns Colorado. Basically, it is from Associated Press. Ski resort owners are, basically they are being pressured into finding better ways, more efficient ways to make snow. Now, apparently what has happened is that snowmaking, number one, takes an awful lot of water and takes an awful lot of energy. And what they're doing is, well, how can we make snow more efficiently? So what they've decided is, okay, a couple of things. If it isn't cold, why would you make snow? So all you're doing is wasting the water. The other thing they're doing is they want to store water so they can use it. And that's hopefully a more efficient way of, you know.
So when they say use it, is that for the snow making or?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. Now, as a kid, I lived at the base of a ski hill and it was awesome. Yeah. The thing would be out there making the snow. It was an amazing time. Like, you know, and we could go up there and toboggan and whatever. They were really great. Now it's a pretty happening spot. I don't think they'd let me wander up there. But anyway, and I used to hear them making the snow all the time.
Yeah.
But Bill, the wonderful thing about putting snow on a ski hill is it melts. And where does it go? In the ground, back to the water table. So it's not like it's totally being used up. The energy to produce it, okay, that I don't know enough about the technology now to make the crystals and so on, but totally on the, why are you making snow when it's above freezing? Yeah, I can grab onto that. And this is because out in that area, Colorado, they're having a huge problem with water. There's just not enough precipitation.
No. Now, on the other side to this, ski resorts want to stay open. So, you know, I want to make the snow so I can make a profit. So it's a hard thing to, you know, what are you going to do? You got to come up with new ways. It's climate change. It's the new era, I guess.
Yeah. I like the fact that attention is being paid to this, right? Like they really, in this article, I find it interesting. They broke down all the numbers, the amount of water being used, you know, in Colorado or wherever, and then how much of that is being put to snowmaking, why this is actually important for the economy because of all the tourism
that
comes
high.
With it.
It really isn't.
Exactly. But even that, you know, if one ski resort were able to make snow more efficiently, imagine the kind of ripple effect that would have on ski resorts.
And people have to remember, there are a lot of places you go skiing and some would say, is this a touristy area? Do people spend money? Which kind of gives you the reason for doing it. Well, that area is. There's lots of areas here, you know, where you're making snow and the only people coming to use it are the locals or people within a small – there's not money being made by the town or the city. So I do understand – or the township, wherever it might be. But here, this is why people go to that part of the world. Billy, thanks a lot, pal. Great stuff.
All right. So we talk about Hong Kong and hiring a private plane for your pets. Boy, oh boy.
Oh.
For the rich.
My goodness.
My goodness.
$20,000 to get your pet out of Hong Kong if you have $20,000. Yeah.
That'll be interesting. We'll get into that tomorrow when Bill returns for the Friday edition of The Buzz. He's here Wednesday through Fridays on Kelly and Company. Coming up next, we flip through some quirky stories from around the globe with Paul Aflalo. Stay tuned. You can find us from your TV, folks. Listen in on Pacheco, Ontario, channel 596, and Compton, channel 88. Visit ami.ca/audio for a list of channel locations in your area. Kelly McDonald, host of the program with Rumya Muthan.
Okay, Kels, twice a month, the second and fourth Tuesday, Thursday. There you go. I'm checking numbers as well as days.
Is that a quiz?
No, I'm quizzing myself out loud.
What happened?
Yeah, so the second and fourth Thursday of the month, we like to get into what we call What in the World, which is where we flip through quirky stories from around the globe. And usually this line ends with Jeff Ryman. But today it's with Paul Aflalo. So, Paul, you're foray into What in the World. How's it feeling right now?
And are you tired, Paul, of us saying, usually we do this with Jeff Ryman, but we're going to do it with Paul Aflalo.
I heard that sigh. I heard that.
I don't know if, listen, I'm not tired of that. Not even a close.
No drama here.
I just don't want to disappoint guys. That's all. I just don't want to disappoint you. Like,
you could never. Like,
I just want to make sure I do a good job and then I find the right
Did you find the funniest,
news.
Silliest, quirkiest
oh,
news
my God.
You could put your eyes on? Listen, okay, great.
So, we're going to hope for the best. This is my fifth audition for something, a new segment. So we're going to do this. And we're going to have fun with it.
If my day job doesn't work out, I'll be here.
That's right. I hope you like what I found. It's been quirky. It's kind of bizarre. And I have so many articles. So I'm going to let you pick and choose. It's going to be like a choose your own adventure.
Oh.
Cats. Yeah, here you go. Cats or science? All right. Yeah, that decided it. That was it. Cats. There you go.
Okay.
So listen. I'm not a cat person. I should acknowledge that right off the bat. It's not that I don't love cats. It's that I'm allergic to cats. So when I'm around them, I just don't touch them because if I do, I'm going to scratch my nose or something. And then that's it. I'm going to be in an allergy fit.
Paul, I do have to stop you and just say, because I just know the way the cards fall and the way the fates work. Does this have to do with Beijing at all?
No, it does not.
Thank you. Okay. Just want to be sure we're not stealing Billy's because then he'd come in tomorrow. And, what?
Nope.
You talked about it. Okay.
Nope. I promise you it has nothing to do with Beijing. This actually has to do with a family in the U.S. They have three cats. It's a couple. Jessica Gerson and Neves and her wife Nikki are really looking forward to using their new Vitamix blender that they whip up some smoothies and soups. Now, those are the top-of-the-line blenders. So if you can nab those on like a Boxing Day sale or a Black Friday sale down in the States or here now, apparently we have that, you know, like that's a good deal. Those blenders go for like $600 and up. And I would love one as someone who likes to cook. I don't have $600 just spent on a blender. So I'm presuming they got this at a really great price. And they did, because it did happen on Black Friday. They're based out of British Columbia. There was just one problem when they got it. It arrived in the mail and they were really happy. And they just quickly, Jessica put the box of the Vitamix blender on the ground. And now they can't unpack it. See, it arrived in the mail on December 16th. And they put it down just quickly, just because they were going to open it up. But then that cardboard box with the blender inside has become the site of a weeks-long turf war between the couple and their three cats in a saga that has garnered thousands of invested followers on social media. The cats have not gotten off the box. And every time they try and move one cat off, another cat gets on. It's a turf war between the cats.
And
changing of the guard. They've been posting daily posts up on their social media, up on their Facebook page. Due warning that if you go check it out, there's a bit of swearing and a bit of language that might be inappropriate. But they've been documenting this formal changing of the guard, as they so call it, of ever shifting alliances between the cats and misadventures involving the tried to bring in decoy boxes. The cats have been bringing in their own decoy boxes to get the other cats off of the box. This is not one of the reasons why I don't have cats. This is actually probably one of the reasons I would love to have cats, to watch them like feud it out.
Wow.
But like, what would you do in a situation like this? What would you guys do?
Cat crisis. I know what Rumya would do. Rumya would just lay on the couch. You turn over and say to a dog, go in there and take care of the problem.
No, no, no. You know how if you get an Amazon package but you didn't get it, then you call them and you're like, yo, I didn't receive my package. This should be falling under that type of
it got sent
category. Category, right?
Yeah, like I got the package, but I can't get to it because of some issues going on. Now, will you guys send me another one, please?
Nope. They would say, look in the contract. What contract? Well, under our rights on the website, your cat problems are are under category B.
Yeah,
sorry.
The cat clause.
We don't, we don't
handle. I just
want
to know, if they would send me a second Vitamix. I mean, obviously, they should be sending me two more because I have three cats and they're all fighting for the one, you know?
Just send your dog in.
Oh,
that would definitely scare.
Well, he's got that base bark.
Right.
The cats wouldn't even need to bark. You just have to walk in, to be honest.
You're lucky they're not up on your new TV, Miss Money, who could buy the mixer for Paul.
Oh, is Rumia going to buy me the mixer?
She's got the money.
Rumia.
Blowing
money. No,
I didn't. No. I turned away
for
1 second. Is
that my welcoming gift? Oh, this is so lovely, guys.
Come on. We're still in the audition.
I'm so touched.
Exactly. Day 5.
So, listen, they're still trying to figure this out, but there is, you can follow them on Facebook. I will find a way to get the link out there for everybody to see this and follow, because it's just so funny. They have photos of cats. They update consistently. And I'm really hoping they get access to the Vitamix blender. I also am, convinced if these cats would just back off for, 3 minutes and just let them take out the blender, they can go back to the feud.
Take your box. Yeah.
Well,
that's all they want is the box. I don't think the cats realize that there's still
something
in it.
Yeah. So backup plan, send us another box.
I think
just
that
the
was
empty
tried.
Box.
I thought
just
that
the empty
was
box.
Tried. Yeah.
So they've been trying to throw in decoy boxes, and the cats have been doing the same thing. That's right. They're not. Mm-hmm. Something about this box
maybe,
is really
maybe
what
it's the scent
for.
Of the blender and the box mixed together or something. Yeah. Maybe it's something
could very
like
well
that.
Be.
Or the heaviness. Wow. Like they could walk around the box and it doesn't wobble. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Blenders wobble, but they don't fall down.
We have endless suggestions.
Yeah, and none of the ladies are all screaming, saying, using those words that we don't want to hear at us, but telling us they tried it.
Exactly.
Where do you want to go now, Paul?
I figured we go from cats to dogs. Is that cool?
Well,
I figured, Rumia, your love of dogs, this would be something up your alley. And just in case anything happens with Glizzy, this article will help you out. All right.
Okay.
In a good way.
Okay. Okay.
Are any of you fans of Looney Tunes and absurd cartoons? Are either of you
watch them? No, I wouldn't go out of my way for them anymore.
Not
but
really.
But
certainly
they're in
watched
the mindset. That you watched exactly at some point.
Yeah, certainly. I'm pretty sure I've seen all of them 100 times.
Okay, so earlier this week, Millie, a 3-year-old Jack Russell Whippet mix, disappeared after slipping out of her leash in Hampshire, England. In Hampshire, England, according to a Facebook post. Yeah, by Den of Thrones Search and Rescue, a nonprofit rescue group. I totally butchered that name. I apologize to them. The group embarked on a 4-day rescue attempt, but little Millie kept disappearing. So they were trying to find ways to find her. The situation became even more severe when the pup was spotted on a mud flat with a rapidly rising tide near Emsworth on the UK's south coast.
Uh-oh.
If Millie wasn't rescued quickly, she would be at risk of drowning. So there was a coordinated effort involving police, firefighters, others ensued, but Millie kept on defying the rescue efforts. That's when one of the drone pilots, Dave Pike, came up with a creative solution to attach a sausage to a drone in order to lure Millie to safety.
I love it. I think it's great.
It is.
Oh my God.
It was a crazy idea, but in an act of desperation. Yeah, go ahead.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me, I just need to know something in this fine print. Okay. So did they not try food lure until the drone guy was like, I got an idea?
But it's getting out
think
there.
So, yeah. It's, I think
no
it's like,
way.
We need to lower someone from a helicopter, I guess, or we need to find a way to get out there. And the dog just wasn't having it. It was just not going
to
work.
Okay,
and them getting out to get the dog. And the dog would probably just go further out until there was real trouble.
Yeah.
It was a crazy idea, but in an act of desperation, the drone rescue team calculated the weight that their vehicle could take. Because these are drones, not very big drones. These aren't the ones that Amazon's trying to use to deliver us packages.
Right.
Like those little drones that people use for photos and stuff. So they figured out the weight, figured it was the best shot. One of the local residents on the beach where they were flying supplied them with the sausages. And then the woman cooked them up for us, and we attached them with a string. And thankfully, Millie took the bait and was coaxed into a safer spot where she could be safely rescued.
They'd have to fly.
So they had
just
time
enough
to cook the sausages, though.
Well, yeah. Well, and the dog's sure fussy. Like, not a hot dog, a sausage.
Listen, this is a beef, particular beef. Dog, right? Yep.
And they'd have to fly low enough so that dog, hey, what's that? You know, look.
Exactly.
And then the dog would start chasing after it. They'd have to fly at the right speed to keep its interest, right? Let's play chase and chase after it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, it's a little bit of play, a little bit of lure. Okay. Yeah. No, I understand.
Circles.
I get it.
Just lift high enough so the dog, I can't quite get it. And all of a sudden the dog's in your arms.
Hop a little forward. Yeah.
And Millie's safe now. Millie's back home with her family. So it worked.
It worked.
There was success.
I just want to... I just want to do a little comparison story. Glizzy got off leash more than once, but all it took was a piece of bacon. Like, it wasn't even real bacon. It was like bacon bits so, mixed in with his kibble.
But that's okay. Because he would still, it's still food, the kibble's there. And why are you putting that other garbage in with my kibble? But it's that could go out and lure and come on, where this is a challenge out there. So interesting. Good idea. Totally. I'm just concerned, like, how much does a darn sausage weigh compared to cameras? People are always putting cameras on there. Like, you think if it can carry a little camera, you can't get... We have to figure it out. Now, how many ounces? Well, eat a couple and let's see.
So this is actually, I was just looking. There's a photo of the drone with the string attached, with the sausage attached by string. And it's actually one of those tiny drones that looks like it could fit in the palm of your hand. Yeah. So I understand why they did the math. The also, the UK is quite windy, so you have to be careful.
Yeah, true. And that water comes in fast, right?
You don't want to compromise the drone during the rescue mission, right?
Nope.
No, of course not.
The dog and grab and bring the drone down and then go back out.
Exactly.
Wouldn't that get you
take the sausage and go?
Take the drone, too. Drag it off. That's right, the drones that sound like mosquitoes anyway. Go ahead, right.
I got one last one for you. This one comes from Jefferson City, Missouri. The Missouri State Patrol Highway Patrol... sent out an alert to all cell phones blaring statewide authority. This is what the message said. You ready? So people in Missouri got this back late over the weekend. Authorities in Gotham City, Missouri were searching for a purple and green 1978 Dodge 3700 GT. Fun fact, though, but there is no Gotham City in Missouri.
Oh,
and the car that was referenced was actually used by the Joker in the 1989 Batman movie.
Yeah.
Soon after the alert, the patrol sent another saying to disregard it in a news release.
April Fool's came early.
Darn it, we were on our 2-hour search. Oh, no.
That's right. What are we going to do?
It was pretty hard to find Gotham City.
That's right.
Do we even live here? Yeah. Okay.
Where's Alfred the butler?
They did say it was a mistake. They indirectly chose the wrong alert system. They weren't meant to send this out to the general public.
Wait, who was it meant to be sent out to?
Probably George. It's his birthday and they were playing a joke on him or something. That's a new kid. Let's send it to his cell phone. Oh, we don't know how to do that.
They were just doing a test, and they say here the Missouri's blue alert system was inadvertently transmitted statewide. The system is actually meant to let the public know when there's a police officer killed or seriously injured in the line of duty.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, and we've seen that, right? Remember the Hawaii a couple of years ago, right?
With
the alert
system.
And I know that stuff's going to happen, but boy, you could really panic people. But thank goodness Gotham City was mentioned, which probably for some people, Gotham City?
Yeah,
right. Batman will take care. Let Batman.
That's exactly it. I think Batman might have been out on it, and maybe the Joker is now put back in place where he belongs in Arkham Asylum.
I hope they put LOL with the disregard text.
Come on, that's it too. Just that.
Come on, own your mistake.
That's right. Take a deep breath and own it, and everything will be fine. Yeah, there you go, folks.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. There you have. Thanks, Paul. This is fun.
Thank you. This was lots of fun.
Next time they'll send out the bat drone
to find people.
That's right.
With the sausage.
With the sausage.
With the sausage.
Later.
Bye, guys.
Paula Flalo joining us for What in the World in place of Jeff Ryman.
Jeff Ryman, you threw me off. Thank you kindly. Whoa. Jim Crisco, our guest on the roundtable. It's the Jays. The Jays have it. We'll be back. Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. It is Thursday, time for the Kelly and Company Roundtable. Ramya Muthan, of course, my co-host at the home studio in Toronto. Kelly McDonald at the home studio in London, Ontario. And the roundtable works this way. We just gather together. Generally, I'm the host, sometimes Ramya. But the idea of it is just pick a bunch of subjects and maybe have a question or two for the players that hang out with us and just have this conversation. No, these guys have no idea what I'm bringing to the table. Today's guest with us is content development specialist in Edmonton, Jim Crisco. Welcome back to the roundtable, James.
Oh, it's great to be back, and always exciting, always a little nervous when we start because I never know what's coming up.
Yeah, we always say that about Bill and the Buzz. We never know which way he's going to go, but this has traditionally always made people... What will that guy get into? All right, well, let's start it. The music of a Canadian superstar is being removed from a streaming service. Give me
things that don't get lost. Neil Young's music will be lost to people who listen to Spotify. The streaming service has agreed to Young's demand that it pull his catalog, part of a battle with Spotify over airing a Joe Rogan podcast with Dr. Robert Malone, an infectious disease specialist big in the anti-vaccine community. Young says he wants no part of a company that would share disinformation to people who might hear his music on Spotify. The streaming service says in a statement it regrets Young's decision and hopes to have him back soon. Young has 6 million followers on Spotify. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
Okay, so Jim, I don't know how much of a Spotify user you are. I don't use Spotify. Of course, you know, you sit there and whether he had the feeling of, well, anti-vaxxer or somebody who went touted so much for, getting vaccinated. I think when you're listening to stuff, enjoying things like that, you want that you go there for that ability to settle back and listen. Sure, you're going to stumble across different things or having the service, I'll just listen to this, this interview. I applaud that he feels that way, of course, and is willing to, take my music off of there. Do I think that's the best solution? Because definitely I want to hear what the anti-vaxxer has to say. In myself, because of the right to speak, I where do you stand when it comes to a streaming service, a service like this, making this call or having to make it?
Well, you know, I'm with you. I think that voices should be allowed to be heard, and then people can make their decisions outside of that. I mean, make their own decisions. It's interesting, you know, at this point, Spotify removed Neil Young off, and they had like 6 million followers. He has about 6 million followers. Apparently, Joe Rogan has many, many more. Yeah. So this time the it's sort of tilted in the favor of the larger voice, I guess, in this case. But the fact is, you know, eventually does it come down to money? Or, you know, that's what I worry about is if platforms decide to remove voices, will it be based on who is more popular than the other? And that's a dangerous thing too. So I'm with you. I really like the fact, or I would really appreciate the fact that people get a chance to speak, and then the audience gets a chance to, you know, not listen if they don't want to or make their own decision.
And I have no problem, for me, with Neil making his demand. This is what he chooses. This is his concern. Great. Okay. But I stop and think, well, what if there was an even 6 million for each, or if Neil had more people listening and so on, would they go the other way? I'd like to believe they'd say, well, that's your choice. And if he chose to leave, they would have to respect that. Rum, any thoughts on this as someone who is a bit more familiar with it than I am?
Yeah, like I listen to Spotify. Spotify is my choice of music streaming service. But as Jim was saying right at the end there, people have their own choices as well, right? Like individually to a level. If you would rather be listening to your music or listening to Neil Young and supporting him through other streaming services where his music remains, right? Like Apple Music and such, then you have the choice of doing that. The other thing is that it's very interesting to me that Spotify takes a stance. We talk about this all the time with social media platforms taking stances or, you know, being part of the decision making, right? Like censoring misinformation or whatever it may be. And there are some social media platforms that refuse to do this. Facebook, I'm not going to name any names, and then get the heck of it as well, right? Like, why don't they take a stance? And there was a situation a few years ago, I think 3 years ago, where X, the artist XXXTentacion, was being threatened by Spotify that his music was going to be removed. Just like that. The content, they weren't happy with it, and they were linking that up with his, you know, doings in the real world, his criminal records, etc. And they were saying, we're going to remove your music if you don't, you know, clean your act or whatever it was. And I was like, what the heck? You know, does Spotify have the right to do something like that? And he had a huge following. But what ended up happening was Lil Wayne, who has an incredible following, right, said, if you remove X's music, then you might as well remove mine, or I will pull my own music off, because it's not up to you whether you remove an artist's music based on their issues, right? Same thing happened with R. Kelly. There was a lot of back and forth about his thing. So it is quite new for sources like this, streaming services, social media, to say, yeah, we are going to pick a side. And yes, we will support one statement over another. And sorry, Neil Young, we will have to, you know, if that's your choice, take your music off, leave it, whatever. And actually making a statement about it. I'm not on one side or the other. I just think it's interesting that this is a turn of events for big companies like this.
Well, you'd think, because these guys, everyone has an agreement, a contract that has been set up to allow this music to be distributed in this form, in this way. So with Neil Young, okay, we're honoring your request, take you off of there, instead of saying, well, no, you're under contract. Your stuff stays until that expires. I think in their shoes, they're doing the right thing. No, sir. We don't want anyone upset with us. We don't want anyone going away mad. We'll do that, as opposed to Neil Young saying, well, get him off of there. I mean, maybe Neil Young's smart enough to know, no, I'm probably going to really lose that battle.
He's waited out.
Yeah, and yeah. I also would like to think he just wouldn't make a demand like that. I just would like to think someone wouldn't. But it's interesting because, as you say, it where's the contract agreements? What does Spotify have to say? No, just because we choose to, you can't take your music off. Just like, well, you're kicking me off because of my past. I'm taking you to court because that's a breach of contract.
Right.
So I am curious about some of that. Guys, let's move on to Uber Technologies has reached an agreement with one of Canada's largest private sector unions to provide optional dispute representation to thousands of Canadian drivers and couriers.
The California-based tech giant announced today its new partnership with United Food and Commercial Workers Canada is not unionizing workers, but is simply providing them with more support. The deal will give the union the ability to provide free representation to about 100,000 Canadian drivers and couriers when they are facing account deactivations and other disputes with Uber. Andrew McDonald, Uber's senior VP of Global Rides and Platform, says we've come together to blaze a new trail towards a better future for app-based workers. Karen Rebo, The Canadian Press, Toronto.
So we'll hear of the, when it gets put into practice, well, they didn't come forward with this, or they weren't behind me with this, or I didn't get. Oh, I understand that. I don't know what this does for conflict resolution, Ramya, as you as a user.
Yeah, I'm a little torn about this one. I mean, my initial reaction, I'm not going to lie to you, is what? Because I think of this as not great for the disability community. I have so many firsthand experiences, secondhand experiences with friends who have been, like, the other day, my friend got left on the street with the door wide open to their Uber because they refused to take a guide dog on. You know what I mean? So, of course, people like that, the drivers who are breaching rules like that, should be, my opinion, fired, suspended, fined, whatever, right? But even that is not fair enough, because what's happening to like directly to the guide dog users and other people with disabilities. And then a few months ago, we talked about Uber wanting to increase waiting fees for people with disabilities. That was rubbish. And now these drivers who definitely need the support, I understand that, right? Because these are not freelance. They're not full-time. They don't get the benefits like full-time workers do. But it feels like, how is this going to get closer to, like you said, Kels, conflict resolution and making sure that users are being heard as well?
Jim, you deal with a lot of different people in the disability world. And I think for Ramya and I, our first is, hey, they're not letting someone with a guide dog in, from our perspective, of course, from the disability community. I have to wonder, because you get tired of hearing this, and we've said it on this show, how many more stories of refusing someone because of this are we going to hear? But I guess in the larger picture, when you hear the numbers of drivers represented and stuff like that, you stop and say, so is this being missed in the training? Why don't they talk about this? And yet, probably, it very much could be. And what seems to be huge for us of how could you forget to explain this to these people, when yet there's so many other things that probably going down the list of the training, it may easily get dropped off. What are your thoughts as someone, I mean, you're part of that world of dealing with people with the disabilities, but, you know, because it seems so ridiculous that we have to hear this so much.
It does. And really what it comes down to for me, and Ramya said, she has multiple stories. I'm sure you do too, Kelly. Your friends have multiple stories of this going on. The really the answer is to have consequences to this. Exactly. You know, the training can be there. The training isn't that intense. It's pretty straightforward on these issues and these circumstances. But the bottom line is, if you do something like that, if you leave somebody at the curb because they have a service animal, there should be, you know, the consequences should be quick and in my opinion, fairly severe. It's not excusable. And the reason it goes on is because people can get away with it get away with it with only mild repercussions.
Because there's no teeth to whatever legislation.
Exactly. And in, you know, probably even greater internally with Uber or organizations like that. And I don't see that this particular solution, although I don't know the ins and outs of it, of having this conflict mediation resolution thing that they want to bring through the union, I don't see that being a fix. Like I don't know how that improves the system versus what it is now. Maybe somewhat for the drivers, but they're not actually part of a union. So wouldn't have that kind of teeth. So,
And I mean, not being part of a union, where does that leave us if we have conflict resolution needs like this? And so many of the things that happen, you know, are we getting people who, well, I was accused of doing this and that, so I have my right to have my representation.
Well, could we even bring stuff like this, like if you were the driver who left someone on the curb because they had a service animal, what would you bring up to this support, this person who's supposed to help you out, this representation, your allergies, your what, you know what I mean? Like there shouldn't be room for that, period.
That's right. Because in training, in accepting, in signing on, those should be in the agreements of, do you have allergies or concern? We do pick up riders with dogs or rider. You can't tell someone to get her, you know, get out because their hair is too long and you're allergic to the shampoo they have or whatever. Let's move on to this one, guys. There's a new member of the Billion Views Club on YouTube.
A lot of people having fun watching Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun video. It's the latest to join the Billion Views Club on YouTube. The song was released in 1983 and peaked at number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart. The video hit YouTube in 2009. Cyndi Lauper says in a statement that the song is a joyful feminist anthem for all women, and she's proud that the video features women from all walks of life. She adds that she's really grateful people are still seeking it out and pressing play. Jason Nathanson, ABC News, Hollywood.
Wonderful people enjoying the tune. Okay, video. Jim, I love hearing the diversity thing, and I think being older guys, we stop and say, yeah, man, that some of these artists were doing that in the 80s, 70s, 60s, but maybe not in the same way that we're seeing some of that diversity now. But when you have different people, different backgrounds, shape, sizes, important.
Absolutely. You know, and you think of this particular instance and this this song, which I agree with the announcer, said it's become kind of an anthem for a generation. And the you know, when I look at something like this, in my opinion, it was unforced. It was a very natural kind of fun way to be, you know, inclusive and diverse and everything else. And that kind of harkens back to a simpler time as, you know, as we're a bit older, that maybe things like that were teaching lessons without teaching lessons, you know, hitting people over the head with it.
Preaching to people, as people like to use that terminology, that, oh, you're going on at me and stuff, because they prefer. And again, we have to have different ways of educating people. And sometimes, a lot of times, show is the way for some people to kind of pick up on something and say, why would that not be? Or, hey, that's great. I'm seeing all sorts of different people.
Exactly. And, you know, I think back to that era, and you had Boy George, you had David Bowie that was doing some really, really wild things. And, you know, the conduit through all that was good music.
Yeah.
And people enjoying to listen to it, listening to it, you know, the sort of the birth somewhat of the music videos and getting the artist look out there along with their sound. So, yeah, it was an interesting era, and I think it's a great thing. And I think it continues to today, but that really, a lot of things took off during that era.
Yeah. And at that time too, cause it was so new, the video stuff going on like that. Rum, anything in closing on this? I mean, you're stuck like I am. Can't really see the video. And well, you can probably see more of it than I can, but
yes.
I've never been able to see enough of any music video to know what's going on.
No, truly. And that's why I kind of love the mini description that came with the clip. But now I've just been thinking, I need to go see what else is in the Billion Views Club. Maybe there's some songs that I'm missing out that are just huge.
Yeah. And again, it is really funny because people will say, who wants to listen or watch all those old videos that look this way or that way? But there's such
classics.
Curiosity for people to want to do that and to take a quick look and stuff like that. So, Jim, thank you very much. We know how much you enjoy popping in here. We enjoy having you. And sometimes it just flies by like it has today. I appreciate the input.
Thanks. It's great being here.
Yeah, Jim Crisco. Of course, you can hear him when we talk to our regional content specialist on the program on Wednesdays and Friday. Jim joins us every second Wednesday to chat. He will be with us next Wednesday on Kelly and Company. And we do the roundtable, folks, every Thursday in this slot right here. Have done it since the beginning of the series of Kelly and Company. So when you can, appreciate you being with us. Check it out any way that you have time to do so, as just any time with the show. Rummy and I will step aside for a moment. When we return, we'll see what's coming up on Now with Dave Brown when Paul Daniel joins us, and take a peek at the Friday edition of Kelly and Company. So when will you have that TV set up and ready to go in your theater?
I got to find out. Hopefully by the end of the weekend. Hopefully.
And you'll move your Sonos stuff into the living room?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Get all that in place. You could do that already ahead of it, I guess, if you wanted, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But
I do need a shelf of some sort, though, so.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Or something to make sure that main bar is there. Television up on the wall, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's going to be a nice little theater space for you.
It's going to be great.
Until you get that great neighbor above that's, quit it!
I have nobody above me, but yes, on the same floor. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe below somebody might, but it sounds like
maybe.
You've got that perfect way where you can kind of have some fun and enjoy it and then figure out how many streaming services you're going to get, like we were discussing with Greg David yesterday.
For the month of February, you mean, right?
Right, yeah. And then make sure you return them all. So do you actually have a list so that you know not to make any mistakes?
No, it's not like that. It's very easy now with the Apple subscription because you sign up and then you remove it. And then
unsigned.
It says that you sure you want to
Yeah.
You sure you want to do it? Because it's nice that you can just do it straight through your Apple subscriptions, right?
Wow. That's really great.
And I got
still
it all figured
it,
out.
And you still have it for a month.
Tips and tricks. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, now that we've said it on here, yeah, you can still do that for, well, at least 10 more minutes before Apple says, oh, really?
Right.
Kind of forget that Yeah. I'm sure lots of people out there love you right now saying, hey, what are you giving away the secrets for? Come on. What segment do you want to scream at?
Oh, we had some good conversations today, Kels. I'll go back to Mike Fair just because I'm giving him triple thumbs up on revisiting these mental health apps that are available on your iOS devices. Free trials, check them out. He went into details on four different apps, Headspace and Calm being the two big ones that we all know about. And you listen to his details, his experiences, and even his wife's experiences.
I like when you talk about the choices, we talked about how some of them would have certain things or have most tools, excuse me. But then that whole business of in the way that may be best for you to consume them or use them. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what you really like. Yeah, sure, they're in competition. Sure, they want your business, but they plan to deliver and be a little more of that fit for you. So really cool stuff. You can check out the Kelly & Company podcast. Just simply subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can listen to the show in segment form. You can listen to the complete Kelly & Company podcast experience. Ramya Muthan is providing our audio vanity card for today. Also, Now with Dave Brown. You can do binge listening of that program as well in case you can't be there at 9 o'clock in the morning to listen in. But if you can or are going to check out the podcast, Paul Daniel joins us now to tell us what's coming up tomorrow on the Friday edition.
Hey, Kelly. On tomorrow's show, the Friday news panel with journalist Michelle McQuigg, Joita Gupta from The Pulse, and joined Dave Brown to discuss some of the big issues of the week, including the continuing tensions at the Russia-Ukraine border and what it might mean in the future. The panel will also discuss the negative reaction by actor Peter Dinklage to the news that Disney is at work on a reboot of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. Mm. This announcement raises the ongoing controversy of disability representation and how people with disabilities are depicted on screen. And the question... Mm-hmm. that the panel will ask is Peter Dinklage's negative response justified?
That's
going
to
take very long.
It's going to be an interesting conversation, that's for sure.
At the very least. And, yeah. And him and critic Michael McNeely will tell us more about the Slam Dance Film Festival, and Karen McKay from the Center for Equitable Library Access will give us her featured selections this week from the CBC Canada Reads competition shortlist that was released earlier this week.
Oh, that's really great. That'll be fun. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Paul Daniel joins us Monday through Thursday to tell us what's coming up the next day on Now with Dave Brown. Again, you can find their program here on AMI, and you can also find them available via podcast. Just simply subscribe, and while you're in there, maybe folks give them a rating and review. Rum, we're going to close up shop and kick things off 2 p.m. tomorrow as we do it again and swing open the gateway to everybody's weekend.
That's right, the Gateway Edition of Kelly & Company. Looking forward to it, Kels.
On the program, Paul Aflalo, he'll return, and he's going to bring us the latest lifestyle headlines. Apple updated its personal safety user guide to address AirTag safety concerns. We'll get the details on that with John Beeler when he joins us for the app update. Also, a man from Midland, Ontario, has invented a tool to help people learn how to skate. We get the story with Karen McGee when she joins us. To kick off the second hour of the show tomorrow, Bill Shackleton, he returns with the Friday Buzz. Ryan Huey highlights a unique podcast series on Audible called Major Frequency. And let's get the conversation, recaps, and comment on segments from the past week on Cut for Time. Paula Falla will be back with us for that on the program. Have a great rest of your Thursday evening, folks. We'll talk to you at 2 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. I'm waving at you. Thanks, folks.
Hi, I'm Red Sale, inviting you to download the latest episode of My Life in Books, where internationally acclaimed authors discuss their lives, their work, and three books that have resonated with them. That's My Life in Books, available wherever you get your AMI podcasts.